Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy as always to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And we get set to wrap this week up, going to a three-day weekend for you, hopefully. Plenty of sports to talk about. Today we're going to continue to wrap up the high school spring sports season. We're going to be joined a little bit later on by Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. The Dinos had one state champion this year, Sarah Owyler. And again, let me congratulate Sarah. She's been a phenomenal athlete for a long time at Carbon. And boy, that's a picture-perfect ending to a really successful high school career. Sarah was a state champ in the long jump. So we're going to talk to Coach Jukes about that and the 2017 season as a whole. Also on the show today, we will talk a little boxing. Oscar De La Hoya wrote a letter to boxing fans yesterday. And it was released before we went off the air, but yesterday we dedicated the entire show to Fierce Fighting Championships Redemption, which is going down on June 3rd. Don't forget about that at the Carbon County Fairgrounds Event Center. Today, though, I'm going to examine that letter. It was a letter in which De La Hoya basically told boxing fans, don't purchase Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor. Don't buy it. We can stop this circus from happening. A lot of irony in that particular letter from De La Hoya. We'll talk about that. I do want to mention the major fight that we have tomorrow night between Errol Spence Jr. and Kell Brook. That's a dynamite fight. I mean, that is a great, great fight. 2017 has been excellent for boxing. And I'm even talking about fights for the casual fans. I think boxing's done well over the last 3 or 4 years. But there's been fights that really only appealed to the hardcore fans. I think PBC has done a terrific job of really bringing awareness to some of the elite athletes in the world of boxing. Now, Spence and Kell Brook, this fight is on Showtime. It's not pay-per-view, but it's also not PBC on cable. So we'll talk a bit about that fight as well. And LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers, they did it last night once again. 8 consecutive seasons, LeBron James has played in the NBA Finals. That sounds really impressive, and it is. Don't get me wrong, it is, but we'll dissect the numbers on that. Here's something that I find even more impressive. This will be the 11th consecutive season that the NBA Finals did not feature either Kobe Bryant or LeBron James. I mean, that's really insane. If you add Dwayne Wade and Tim Duncan to that category, it's like the last 20-something years. I can't even remember. It's a long time. It's like 20 years since the last time we had an NBA Finals. It didn't feature one of those three guys. But we got LeBron and Duncan. We never got to see LeBron and Kobe, and they have accounted for now the last 11 NBA Finals. LeBron does it again last night in a major way, to no one's surprise. Cleveland just steamrolls the Boston Celtics. Do they have a chance against the Golden State Warriors? We'll talk about that series as well on the show today. Let's start by going over some of the national headlines. We'll begin with the NBA. Why not? That's what it's all about right now. Isaiah Thomas, point guard for the Boston Celtics. Surgery, not an option on his hip. That's according to a report that came out today. He says he must wait until the swelling goes down in his injured hip before determining the rehabilitation plan, but surgery is not going to be an option for him. A lot of people thought that Isaiah Thomas should have been considered in the running for the MVP race this season. I didn't think so. I thought there were some serious flaws within this Boston team, although they are rebuilt in a major way, and they are set up to be very good for a long time. I just don't know if Isaiah Thomas is part of that picture long-term for Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics. Speaking of long-term, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Chris Paul would re-up with the Clippers this offseason. Clippers can offer him something like $200 million, and they will, to keep him there long-term. I think Chris Paul more than likely finishes his career in Los Angeles as a Clipper. But today, Mark Stein reported something that was very interesting. There's been the rumor that the San Antonio Spurs would look to boost their roster in a major way by making a run at Chris Paul. Now, I didn't think it was I didn't think there was much to this rumor. And the reason why the Spurs are not in a position to where they can offer Chris Paul heavy money without doing some drastic rework to that roster, which would involve stripping its depth. Now, but just looking at what happened in the conference finals, and I know Kawhi Leonard didn't play, but we still know what would have happened. Warriors win that series in five, maybe six at the most. The Spurs are not good enough to win an NBA championship, yet they have one of the top three or four players in the league right now in Kawhi Leonard. So at what point do you begin to strip down this team front to back? The Clippers, according to Mark Stein of ESPN, said that they are worried and concerned that the Spurs would make a legitimate run at Chris Paul. Now, the only reason why I don't put a whole lot into this is because it would just take a lot of doing. It's not impossible. We have seen some crazy things happen regarding free agency in the NBA, but it would be extremely complicated for the Spurs to add Paul. Just looking at where they're sitting right now, he would demand at least a four-year, $153 million deal. Let's get that out of the way, set that right now before you start looking at the numbers for the Spurs. Four-year, $153 million deal. How could the Spurs possibly do that? Looking at the way things are set up right now. Option A would be a sign-and-trade in which the Clippers could sign Paul to a four-year max deal, send him to San Antonio for matching salaries, and maybe some younger pieces. Now, the Spurs have that. They have Jonathan Simmons. They have Danny Green. They have Pau Gasol. They have draft picks. But that option would limit Paul to a four-year deal and also hard cap the Spurs at about $6 million above the luxury tax. That's not very appealing because it would really limit this squad from making the necessary improvements around the team to make sure you're complete to contend with Golden State. Otherwise, they're going to have to sign him in free agency. And to do that, they need to clear about $36 million in cap space. Tony Parker is set to make $15.4 next year. I guess a tanking team would take on that contract. I guess, but they're not going to take on that contract for nothing, so you're going to have to bring back some salary if you were to get rid of him. For the sake of the argument, we'll say that Manu Ginobili is done, and so you're gaining some money there. But let's say Tony Parker's not. They're on the hook to fulfill that contract. So you look at the salary breakdown. LaMarcus Aldridge, $21.4 million. Kawhi, $18.8 million. Pau Gasol, $16.1 million. That's a player option. He's not going to decline that because he's not going to get $16.1 million anywhere else. Tim Duncan is still stretched. David Lee has a player option. He'll decline it because he's due to make $2.3 million next year. He'll make more money out on the open market. This doesn't take into consideration that Patty Mills and Jonathan Simmons are as good as gone if Chris Paul was to go to San Antonio. See, there's a lot of moving pieces here. Apparently, there's enough logistically happening behind the scenes to give the Clippers an uneasy feeling. So I thought, you know, one of the biggest players in free agency, Chris Paul, I thought he'd be off the table relatively soon. Maybe that's not going to be the case. San Antonio is prepared to make a big run at Chris Paul. That's some of the big news happening in the national sports scene. Let's take a look at the scoreboard. And while we still get about, 5 days before we dive into game one of the NBA Finals, full slate of games in Major League Baseball, and they all will get rolling in the 5 o'clock hour. 5:05, the A's travel on the road to take on the Yankees. We get the Padres at the Nationals. The Phillies welcome in Cincinnati, and the Mets are on the road to take on the Pirates. Texas at Toronto. Boston brings in Seattle. Kansas City at Cleveland, and the Marlins will take on the Angels. All of those games in the 5:10 hour. Arizona will travel to meet Milwaukee. Minnesota plays host to Tampa Bay. We get Baltimore at Houston, Detroit at Chicago, and St. Louis at Colorado. Two games nightcap-wise. We get the Cubs and the Dodgers at 8:10. Jake Arrieta going up against Alex Wood, and then we get the Braves and the Giants in the nightcap. Yamy Garcia goes up against Matt Kane. So some great baseball on tap today as well. It's a quick rundown of everything that's happening in the national sports scene. Again, today on the show, we're going to talk to Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbonado Track and Field Squad. We will wrap up that portion of the high school sports season, and we'll talk some boxing and some more NBA basketball. Friday show here of Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. It was a week ago today that the Desert Thunder Raceway officially opened up their gates for the first of three sets of races this season. There were two nights full of races from a variety of classes. And now, the results are official, and the state and national points are accounted for. Randy Yarts, driver of the number 14 car, took home the checkered flag in Friday's IMCA Modified Showdown. Yarts managed to hold off second place Michael Hale, who finished just one ahead of Chase Hansen. Wyatt Howard and Dakota Berry rounded out the top five. Saturday's finale in the IMCA Modified class featured a completely different top three. Reagan Tafoya topped Derek Roden for first. Tafoya improved drastically from Friday's 13th place finish, while Roden moved up from 11th. Berry improved to third place, followed by Hansen and Hale. While finishing in the top five in both nights in the modified class, Hale claimed first place both Friday and Saturday in the hobby stocks. Grayson Denny delivered two second place finishes, while Brett Housekeeper ended third and fourth. Devin Huff prevented Housekeeper from two straight third place finishes. Scott Gray swept the sports mods each night. He topped Steve Gray on Friday and Robert Galeos on Saturday. Brian Carey ran consistent throughout the weekend with two third-place finishes. Shane Simper, Jason Reese, and Daryl Cordry also logged top five marks. You can get the complete results from all seven classes at CastleCountryRadio.com. On Friday, June 3rd, Fierce Fighting Championship will return with another exciting card at the Carbon County Fairgrounds. 10 fights are currently scheduled on the card, and that features local fighters Mike Jones and Cy Nelson. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, the entire show was geared to the upcoming fight card, which featured six different fighters, including the two locals. You can check out that podcast right now at CastleCountryRadio.com, and tickets for the event are on sale by visiting FierceFightingChampionship.com. Ticket prices begin at just $30. The American Legion baseball season is just about to get underway in the Castle Country. Both Price and Helper will open up the season next week. Starting on June 2nd, which is Friday, the Helper American Legion squad will play host to St. George. This is actually a league contest for Helper, which has a team consisting of kids from Carbon High School. While St. George is pegged to be one of the front runners in the new Southern Division, consisting of nine teams, the top four will move on to the state championship tournament, which will take place at the end of July. Now, while Helper will get things off and rolling on Friday, June 2nd, the Price American Legion team will take to the field for the very first time the following day on June 3rd as they play host to a doubleheader, again against St. George. The Friday contest against Helper is scheduled to begin at 8 p.m. Price will take on St. George at 12-2. Again, that'll be this upcoming Friday and Saturday here in the Castle Country. Speaking of upcoming events, the 60 Shades of Grey 5K run is set for June 10th. Check-in for this particular event is set for 6:30 p.m. at the Carbon County Senior Center. The cost is $15, and that does include a t-shirt if you register before June 7th, or $25 per family. The race will begin at 7 p.m. This 5K is part of a hefty summer schedule that is offered by Carbon County Recreation for those who love to run. And we end by moving over to the world of NASCAR. This Sunday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, NASCAR Monster Energy Cup Racing makes its return with the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. NASCAR is fresh off of their All-Star race last Saturday, which was also at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Start time for this event is set for 4 p.m. Again, that will be on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Make sure you visit CastleCountryRadio.com, click on the Drive Time Sports link, and you'll have access to recent coaches' interviews, featured guests on Drive Time Sports, and complete show podcasts. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
It's a Friday edition of Drive Time Sports here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Coach's Corner here today as we get back to the regular schedule. Spring sports season wrap-up will continue. The Carbon Dino track and field squad Their season came to a close this past Saturday. Now, a week ago today, Carbon High School senior Sarah Owyler wrapped up her track and field season by winning the state championship in the long jump. So happy for Sarah, just a stud athlete who really puts in the work. And that's a happy ending. Sarah, who's been the best long jumper, I think, in the state for the last couple of years, finally getting that state championship. Joining us right now to talk about that and the season as a whole, we have head coach Jimmy Jukes. Coach, a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Definitely. Coach, the season it's over with. You guys wrapped things up at the state championship tournament this past weekend. And all in all, we got one state champion. And I'll tell you, that one state champion truly deserved it. And it's great to see a senior go out like that.
It is, you know. I mean, Sarah has worked hard for, you know, all 4 years that she's been in high school with us. And, you know, she's worked her tail off. And, you know, she didn't quite get it last year. She jumped well last year at the state tournament, just got beat. And this year, she made sure that was going to be in check and there wasn't going to be any kind of issues. And she went out and jumped well and just kind of put it out of reach for everybody.
You know, with all this being said, Coach, she also had to battle through injuries throughout the year. And I to see someone in this particular sport work through the things that Sarah had worked through, knowing that there were such high expectations at the beginning of the season, it put a smile on my face to see that she won a state championship.
Right. You know, I mean, she had that hip thing that kind of came into play, and then she wrecked in that in the 100 hurdles in up at BYU, and you know, anybody else that would have rattled, and she battled through that, battled back, and had to take a little bit of time off and didn't get as much work in as she would have liked, and but she came back and put the jumps together in the morning. It was the first event of the state tournament, so she got it out of the way right to start with, and so kind of got that that weight off her shoulders of saying, you know, you've been the best in the state for 2 years and don't have a state championship, and was able to win the state title and get that off her shoulders. So that was really, I was really glad to see that happen for her.
Outside of Sarah, I know the girls' team throughout the entire year, they gave us a lot to cheer about, Coach. They had a couple of meets at the beginning of the season where they just looked dynamic all in all. When you look at the way they performed at state, how did you assess the performances of the team in general?
It was really good. I mean, we made it through the, you know, region. We got quite a few qualified, and then you know, I thought Mikkel Monson stepped up big for us. You know, she had a really bad region meet. She was feeling under the weather at the region meet, and just couldn't perform up to her normal level. And then at state, she rose above that and really overcame a rough meet to take fourth in the long jump at state, which I thought was impressive. I thought Shannon Baker came along really well to help. She almost made it into the final there, but then she helped our medley team that had Shannon Baker and Lindsay Blank, and we had Sadie Crompton on that, and who was the fourth one? I think Lindsay, Shannon, Sadie, and who was on that? Oh, Sarah Owyler. And they, you know, went out and took fourth, and they ran really well. Sadie wasn't really happy with her 800 on that, and so she rebounds the next day and runs a personal best as the second fastest time in school history in that 800 to take sixth. And she did a great job running that well and shaking off the earlier day that she thought, and we were happy with her, but she wasn't happy with it, and decided to go after it in that 800 and ran really, really well, and opened up a couple college doors in the process for her, which was great for her.
If we move over to the boys' squad, they score 3 points total in this particular state championship tournament. Coach, at the beginning of the year, you and I had talked a little bit about the boys' team, and I remember the first interview, you said you didn't know what to expect from the boys' team this year. So now that it's all said and done, did they exceed your expectations? Is it what you thought? Is it a little bit less? I mean, how do you assess their performance this year?
Well, you know, I was pleased with the boys that we had. We got hit by the injury bug on the boys' side. You know, we had Carson Frame go down with a hip injury, and we didn't get him back. And as a freshman, he was looking like he was going to be really promising coming up. And then we lost Cash Barrett to a hamstring injury right at the end of the season. And so that pretty much did in our relays at that point, with Kyle and Derek kind of shouldering the load. And you know, they went into region. They scored almost all our points in region. We just put them in individual events, and they qualified in a whole bunch of events. We took them up there, and they both made it to the final in the long jump, got within a quarter of an inch of each other, which was kind of fitting because those two have competed and everything they've done, pushed each other, and it was good to see them kind of go out that way. It was kind of fitting to have Kylie jumped that well. But my guys in general, I mean, we're getting better. We're a young group. You know, we got McCade Bradley coming up in the shot. He improved 2 feet at region, which was huge for him. Ryland Chamberlain in the throws as well in the discus. His goal at the start of the year was to hit 80 feet. He threw 101 by the end of the year. So that was impressive for us to see him improve that much. Our distance program is getting better and better as we go. You know, we got some upcoming kids. And the classification change is really going to help our boys team out quite a bit. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to next year. I mean, I think we were a little bit off this year, but a lot of that had to do with injury.
Well, and again, I mean, obviously someone can just look at the results from the state tournament, the state meet, and you see he only scored 3 points. I mean, that's not really a clear indicator on how the program has improved throughout the year. I mean, you're the best person to assess that.
Right. You know, and you look at, I mean, our girls team, if our 4x1 had a bad state meet, if they run, they ran the first day of trials, they were ranked fourth going into the final, and we had a couple bad handoffs that we thought were going to be fixed, and they got into the final, and Mikkel was running a lot faster than she did in prelims, and things were looking good, and then we just had that back exchange that caused us to get disqualified in that race, and you know, they score there possibly third or second. You know, our girls move all the way up to almost, you know, fourth at the state meet, and to do that with the girls we had would be pretty remarkable. And our boys team, you know, we get, if we have Cash healthy, if we have Carter, you know, running well, and we have Carson in that mix, you know, there's a lot that could be different. And now that we're getting into the new classification change, you're going to see how big of progress Carbon has made. It's hard to manage that at the state meet when you're going against, as you know, as all the 3A coaches kind of call it, the junior colleges down south with Desert Hills that brought more kids to the state meet than any other team, 1A through 5A. It's kind of hard to compete against teams that have the numbers like that. But and having them move up to 4A is such a huge deal for track that next year you'll be able to gauge a lot better and seeing what Carbon actually has been able to do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've talked to a lot of coaches about the new classification next year. In fact, as we go through these season wrap-up interviews, each coach has kind of commented on that. Next year, it shapes up well for Carbon, I think, all the way across the board, specifically in track and field. I think the two sports where we're going to see the biggest difference, I think baseball, and I think we're going to see a huge difference in track and field as well.
Oh, I agree. I think in track and field, I mean, you go from, you know, from having to compete against the Desert Hills and the Cedar City teams, and you're going to see a huge we're going to actually be on a level playing field for once in track and field, and it'll be nice to have that, especially for the kids, because some of these kids are running great, but you don't know how good they're running because you don't get the opportunity to see what they're doing.
Between now and then, Coach, I mean, first off, it's such an exhausting season. You guys run and you perform so often, sometimes twice a week. When you get set for the state tournament, how energized are the kids? I mean, is it one of those deals where it's like, okay, we've been looking forward to this all year long, or are they just really worn down by that stage?
You know what? They were really excited because of some of the things that had happened in region. I mean, we had some kids going to state that were a little bit, we weren't sure were going to happen. You know, Alexia Johnson came out and, you know, her and Megan Swayze and Sarah went 1, 2, and 3 at region. And so our hurdle group was just ecstatic about how they had done. You know, Caitlin Dimmick was ready to go. She wanted to perform well before she moves. You know, Jody Noyes, it was her first, and we had a lot of first-time state people going. So we had, like, Jody Noyes was going for the first time. And then we had some of our returners coming in, you know, Lindsay's senior year, you know. And so the state tournament had a lot of excitement around it. You know, Kyle and Derek were excited about what they could possibly do. And so when you get to that state, getting qualified to state, there's a little bit of a relief. Once you know you're going to state, there's a relief during that week. And then the kids are just excited and ready to go. They get really excited about state.
Well, it's definitely a unique experience. I've got to see the state championship tournament one time, state championship meet, and it's one of those deals, Coach, where until you've actually seen it, it's quite the experience. It's comparable to wrestling. There's so much going on. If you blink, you're going to miss something.
Oh, that's exactly it. And the thing is there's always something going on, and you see some remarkable things at State. Besides your own athletes, you know, you get to go up there and see some of the best athletes in the nation. This year, I mean, Utah has put forth, I think, four or five of the best distance runners in the nation were up at the State meet. They had the ESPN did an article on Hunter, a double paraplegic kid. He broke two state records up there. He's an Olympian, a Paralympian in the Rio de Janeiro, took third. You got to see him run. You got to see, you know, just amazing performances from kids. The Jaslyn Gardner from Enterprise, you know, she ran two of the fastest times ever ran by a girl in the state of Utah. And so it's fun because you get to go see your kids, but you also get to see what Utah has to offer in track and field, and it's above and beyond what most states even get to at their state meets.
I'm sure it's kind of bittersweet, right, to get to the end of the season. One of those bittersweet moments for a coach.
You know, you get into that the end of the season, and you look back, and we had our awards banquet last night, and you look back on the season and what you've accomplished. You know, this team this year, we brought in seven trophies this year, girls and boys combined. Which was it was great to see that, getting to see the kids and have that sense of accomplishment at the end of the year that they've done some things that other track programs haven't been able to do. You know, our girls run on a winning spree there for a little while, and that was neat to see. We have a state title come home. We're talking about potential school records that could fall in the next little while. You know, and so at the end of the season, it feels good when you get done and you feel like you've accomplished something great with a great group of kids, and that's kind of how we feel.
Coach, it has been fun to follow the season, the team all season long, and it's always fun to get you on and talk a little bit about it. Before I let you go, all in all, if you had to give this season a grade, what would you give it?
I would give it probably an A minus would be what I would give it. I think it was a great year. There's just a few things that we could have done a little bit better, but I think that we're so far ahead in our development on the program and the size of the program and the excitement around the program. I mean, the excitement around Carbon High Track isn't just in the community here. We go up to the state meet and people are talking about us. People are noticing, you know, after the first day, our girls were in second place. And we've kind of been put on the state scene now with that track and field program, which is always a goal. You want people to be looking over and be like, man, where'd that Carbon team come from? And that's what we're getting. And so there's still room for improvement, but I think we're well on our way.
Always fun to talk with you, Coach. Again, thank you for all the time throughout the season. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Again, that's Coach Jimmy Jukes of the Carbondano Track and Field Squad talking about the final meet of the season, state championship, and again, congratulations to Sarah O'Weiler. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this. We'll move back over, talk national sports. We have some boxing and some NBA on tap.
Listen to Drive Time Sports weekdays 4 to 5 on News Talk 750 AM KOAL.
A long three from Thompson, and that is an NBA record. His 10th three-pointer of the night. Thompson fires for three. Yes! Golden State by three.
This is Clay Thompson from the Golden State Warriors, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Lester on KOAL 750 AM.
A little less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me.
The inevitable was set last night. The Cleveland Cavaliers topped the Boston Celtics in blowout fashion to advance to the NBA championship. And on June 1st, we get game one of the rubber match between Cleveland and Golden State. You know, it's the first time in NBA history that the same teams have played three consecutive years in the NBA Finals. Kind of odd that that's never happened when you think of the dominance. Even in the 80s. I mean, the 80s are known for a classic rivalry between the Lakers and the Celtics. They never met three consecutive times. The Lakers went four consecutive years, but Boston, they didn't go three consecutive years against the Lakers. Same with Philadelphia. And even at the end of that era, where you had Detroit, I say the end of the era, the end of the 80s, when Detroit walked in and won two straight NBA championships, it didn't happen. The Lakers had a chance to get there for three consecutive matchups with the Detroit, but it didn't happen. So it's kind of odd. First time that's ever happened in the history of the NBA. The topic today is LeBron James and getting to the NBA Finals now eight times in his career. Seven consecutive years he's been in the NBA Finals. He went once with the Cavaliers back in 2007 when they lost, and they lost badly to the San Antonio Spurs. And to LeBron James' credit, that was a team that probably did not deserve to be in the NBA Finals. Four straight trips with Miami, and now three straight trips with Cleveland. First player in NBA history to go to the NBA Finals four times with two different teams. And I know that that's going to be something that you'll put on LeBron James's resume. And at the end of his career, you'll look back on that and say, wow. I think, you know, 15, 20 years from now, you'll look back on that and say, wow. He went to the NBA Finals eight times, four times with two different teams. It's never happened before. Now, with that being said, I don't think it's that impressive. Like, I think it's great that LeBron has led Cleveland over the last 3 years to the NBA Finals. Don't get me wrong. His performance last year in the Finals was remarkable. And I already consider him a top eight player of all time. But the stat of him going to the NBA Finals eight times, four times with the Cavs, four times with the Heat, it's not impressive, and I'll tell you why. Only once has LeBron gone to the NBA Finals without two other All-Stars on his team. And that was back in 2007, which again, that Cavalier team had no business being in the NBA Finals. LeBron single-handedly took them to the final round. I get it. But from that point on, like, he played with Bosch and Wade. And there were legitimate questions early on during that experiment in Miami if it was Wade's team or LeBron's team, because Wade was still the closer. That was helped out by Bosch and Wade drastically. Then he goes to Cleveland. He left Miami when there were obvious signs of age, obvious flaws being exposed in the Miami roster. He goes back to Cleveland, and he plays with Kyrie Irving and then forced to trade for Kevin Love. So again, he's got two All-Stars. I'm not ignoring the fact that both Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving were injured the first time, the second time that Cleveland went to the NBA Finals with LeBron. They lost. He had a healthy crew last year, and they won. But again, he was aided by two All-Stars throughout the season. That's reason number one why going to the NBA Finals four times with two different teams is not impressive. Number two, he's got a losing record in the NBA Finals. And that has to account for something. And I think reason number two is directly correlated with reason number three. The Eastern Conference is bad, and it's been bad for quite some time. There's typically been one team that you had to worry about in the Eastern Conference. Now, I know the West this season is nothing to write home about. I get it, because there's a lot of injuries. I didn't view Houston as a legitimate NBA championship contender until the second round, when they basically destroyed San Antonio in Game 1, so the West wasn't much better. But you look over the past 8 years in the Eastern Conference, there's typically been one or two teams that you had to worry about. Orlando for a couple of years, and you had Boston and Cleveland. And then you had Miami, and you had an aging Boston team. And then you had a budding Indiana team that couldn't quite get over the hump. You had Chicago for a year. See, there's one team that would possess a problem, or somewhat of a problem, for a LeBron James-led squad. That's it. But those are the three reasons why I look at that stat and I'm not thoroughly and overly impressed. It's never happened before, I get it. But at the same time, there are some serious contributing factors as to why it's happened. And you can't overlook those. Now, LeBron has also made some playoff history, and this is something that's undisputable. He now has more career playoff points than Michael Jordan. He's played in a lot more playoff games than MJ. But he's taken over 100 shots less than MJ to pass him in points. LeBron has 5,995 points on 4,379 shots. Michael Jordan, 5,987 points on 4,497 shots. Things come easier for LeBron. And I'll tell you why they come easier for LeBron. He's played with two other legitimate offensive players. That limits wear and tear on your body, and it makes the game easier for you. Like, the reason Kevin Durant left OKC is because he felt he would have an easier time not winning a championship. Let's not get it twisted. He knew he had a better chance to win a championship, but he knew the game would be easier for him. And that's what Jerry West sold him on when he brought him to Golden State. And proof of that was, I believe it was Game 4 against San Antonio. He went 10 of 13. And in watching that game, he didn't have to work for those 10 makes. OKC, he's working for 10 makes. didn't work for him in Golden State. It came easy because he's a system. He's a player in a system built with three other legitimate offensive weapons. And because of that, it's less wear and tear on your body. And so while I'm giving LeBron his due, I'm saying keep those specific statistics in perspective. That's all I'm saying. There's contributing factors to it. He didn't do it on his own. And that's one of the things that we get caught up with, I think, too often when talking basketball. One player's legacy. I was on two separate shows today, and I was asked the same exact question on both shows regarding the NBA Finals. If LeBron James was to lose in these finals to the Warriors, what would it do to his legacy? The answer to that is nothing. He's won three championships. He promised a championship to Cleveland. He got it, and he got it with a phenomenal effort last season in the finals. Phenomenal effort in the finals. He was terrific against Golden State. A loss to this Golden State team does nothing to his legacy. A win would definitely help it, because this Warriors team is one of the best squads I have seen in a long time. I don't know how you guard them. And as you start previewing the NBA Finals, here's a statistic that is very telling. The Warriors were averaging 24 points per game in transition in the regular season. You would expect that number to drop drastically come postseason. Because where there is really no parity in the NBA, you're playing a lot of bad teams. I mean, 50% of the league, close to 50% of the league, does not make the postseason. And you're going up against, seven teams in the Western Conference that are below 500. So you would expect the Warriors to increase that number of transition points against squads like that, right? They averaged 24.7 points per contest in transition during the regular season. That number has only dropped to 22 in the postseason. And that's going up against what you would say three of the best eight teams in the Western Conference. And they had little to no problem with them. I think even more impressive is the fact that they did it against the Utah Jazz, a team that wants to slow the game down, a team that's very good defensively. Like, you have to consider, they played the Jazz four times when looking at that average. Now, with that being said, Cleveland, and the big knock on Cleveland for me in the regular season was they're not very good defensively. They were allowing close to 19 points per game in transition during the regular season. They have trimmed that down to 14. Now, again, I think Golden State is playing against tougher competition than Cleveland was in the Eastern Conference. And so looking at this series on paper, I don't know how Cleveland wins this series. In fact, I think it goes five games. I hate predictions, but I would expect Golden State to take games one and two at home. Cleveland gives us something to talk about. They win game three at home. We have a pretty compelling game four, but the Warriors get the win, and then they close it out in five. That's my prediction for the series. If LeBron James and the Cavaliers were to win the NBA championship this year, it does an awful lot for LeBron's legacy. And I hate legacy talk, but it's the fact. If he beats the 73-win Golden State Warriors and then comes back and beats one of the best teams that we have seen in decades in the NBA, it's very, very telling to just how great this guy is. And again, I put him top eight all time. Don't take what I said at the beginning of this segment, saying I'm not impressed by this guy going to the finals four times with two different teams. I'm not impressed by that stat based on the variables that aren't really accounted for when you look at it on paper. Don't take that as an absolute negative. I'm not taking anything away from the guy's greatness. I'm just saying keep those specific statistics in perspective. This guy's not better than Michael Jordan yet, but he's only 32 years old. He's got time. This is a huge series, I think, for LeBron. Once again, it's Cleveland, it's Golden State, first time in league history. We get the same teams going at it for three consecutive years. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, let's get back to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on 750 AM, KOAL.
We get a great boxing fight tomorrow. Errol Spence Jr., who I believe is the next big thing in the world of boxing, in the glamorous division, the welterweight division, takes on Kell Brook for the IBF welterweight crown. That's going to take place in the UK. So you have a young, flashy, exciting American in Errol Spence who has never lost a professional fight and has only gone past eight rounds one time in his career, and that was all the way back in 2014. He's like an artist when it comes to finishing opponents inside the ring. I love Errol Spence Jr. going up against Kell Brook, who has never backed down from a challenge. He jumped two weight classes to fight Triple G and had some success with Triple G before the bigger, more powerful fighter took over. He suffered a broken orbital bone in that fight, but look, through four rounds, two out of the three judges had Kell Brook up on the scorecards. And I tip my hat to Brook for climbing to fight such a dangerous fighter in Triple G to begin with. That's a great fight. It's going down tomorrow on Showtime. But the big story in boxing today, unfortunately, it's Oscar De La Hoya, because he found a way to steal the headlines once again. He wrote an open letter to boxing fans telling them not to purchase the potential fight between Mayweather and McGregor. And I'll get behind what the actual motivation is for De La Hoya to write this letter in just a moment. But it's a very hypocritical letter, first off and foremost. And it also comes across as very condescending. And here's one of the things that really upsets me about the national sports media. At times, I feel they believe sports fans are stupid. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. I'm a sports fan. You're a sports fan. We may not agree on every topic, but we will agree on this. We know what we like, and we know what we want to see. De La Hoya is basically telling boxing fans in this open letter not to support what is a circus. Here's the letter. I'm going to read you a piece of it. It starts off with, "To my fellow boxing fans, I write in hopes that together we can protect the sport of boxing. With each passing day, it looks more and more likely like the circus known as Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor will be coming to town in the near future." It continues to read, but then it reaches a point to where it says, "One group will eventually be left to make sure this farce does not occur. We, the fans, who are the lifeblood of our sport." There's no secret that Oscar De La Hoya and Floyd Mayweather have a rather rugged history. They haven't liked each other for a very long time. Mayweather defeated De La Hoya in 2007, and though it was a split decision victory for Mayweather, he did it quite easy. Talks for a potential rematch broke down. Floyd retired, didn't want to step back in and fight De La Hoya, although he climbed a weight class to fight De La Hoya at 154. He didn't want to do it again. From that point on, when Floyd returned to the ring, he was on a fight-by-fight basis contract with Golden Boy, De La Hoya's promotion company. Once Floyd signed a massive deal with Showtime, he had pulled away from Golden Boy, and De La Hoya was really not making a whole lot of money off Floyd anymore, although Floyd did fight Canelo Alvarez, who is with Oscar De La Hoya, so he was able to reap the benefit of one more major fight. De La Hoya did not have a hand in the mega fight between Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, which once again, De La Hoya brought up in this open letter. Quote, "If you thought Mayweather-Pacquiao was a black eye for our sport, a matchup between two of the best pound-for-pound fighters that simply didn't deliver, just wait until the best boxer of a generation dismantles someone who has never boxed competitively at any level." So he brings up that Mayweather-Pacquiao was a black eye for the sport. And while boxing fans and casual fans may have felt entitled to a brawl, a classic, something that we're going to look back on in 50 years and say that was a terrific fight because of the buildup, we didn't get it. And I think boxing fans and I think casual fans felt entitled to that, specifically because they paid a $100 price tag and we heard nothing but this fight for 5 years. They didn't get it. Was it a black eye for boxing? No. What it did was solidify Floyd Mayweather as the smoothest, most competent boxer of our generation. That's what that fight did. But De La Hoya had no hand in it, so he's bitter about that. He goes on to call this McGregor-Mayweather fight a farce. Ironic considering that Oscar De La Hoya, this past month, charged people $69.99 to watch Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., which was a snooze fest of a fight, provided very little entertainment. And again, if you felt entitled to a brawl, you weren't going to get it going into that fight. And I think those who were educated on this particular fight knew that. Maybe it appealed to some of the casual fans, but for the most part, people knew what they were going to get in this fight. De La Hoya used this fight as a platform to launch Triple G and Canelo in September. I have never seen a boxing fight end like that before. While Canelo was standing in the ring, Triple G walks to the ring with ring music, gets in, and Canelo offers him a challenge, and they set the date for September. Confetti flies, and a promo plays. If that doesn't rank a Vince McMahon in the WWE, what does? So I just get a kick out of Oscar De La Hoya basically shaming boxing fans, basically shaming sports fans by saying if you buy this, you're contributing to the death of a sport. When in actuality, he contributed to a black eye in boxing this past month by overhyping a fight that would never live up to the expectation. So to the casual fan, for what it's worth, I tell you, buy Mayweather-McGregor. Because it's something we talk about. The what-if conversations in sports are fantastic. We were just talking about LeBron James' legacy last segment. How many times have you had a what-if conversation with one of your friends around the water cooler? What if LeBron James and the Heat got to go up against Michael Jordan and the Bulls? What if? What if Magic Johnson's Lakers went toe-to-toe with the newest version of Showtime of the Golden State Warriors? We talk what-ifs all the time in sports. What if an elite boxer stepped into the ring with an elite MMA puncher? What if? We've talked about it before. We talked about Mayweather and Rousey. We talked about Mayweather and McGregor. And now we're on the verge of getting that fight. Do not feel ashamed for purchasing it. You don't even have to view it as a circus, as a sideshow. View it as an actual visual of the what-if conversations that we as sports fans have with one another time and time again. I, for one, can't wait for this fight to happen. And Oscar De La Hoya puts out this particular letter only because he knows that a Mayweather-McGregor fight will outsell Triple G Canelo. And me being a boxing fan, a pure boxing fan, I understand which fight has more historical significance to the sport. It's Triple G Canelo. I also understand the business aspect and the what-if that we as sports fans enjoy so much, knowing that Mayweather-McGregor will outsell it. This fight is a direct threat to the biggest fight that boxing could make at the time, Triple G Canelo. Always a pleasure to join you on the afternoons to talk local and national sports. Please have a very safe and fun Memorial Day weekend. I will catch you back here live in the studio on Tuesday. Best of show coming your way on Monday. Be safe. I am out.